Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the East Coast Convention. We're going to start this meeting off with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, I'm going to start off with the press statement, okay? As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. The primary purpose of our public relations efforts is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to still suffering addicts. Members of the press are sometimes attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If a member of the press approaches you, please direct them to the chair or vice chair of the convention. If any members of the media are present, we ask you to contact the chair or vice chair of the convention for information. And I'm sorry, my name is Tamika and I'm an addict. Okay, this is the social media statement. The widespread of the social media networking and social media by our fellowship indicates that these forums are resources that can serve to facilitate greater communication and interactions among Narcotics Anonymous. With that being said, some of our members may not want to be depicted in photos or social media platforms. Please be mindful of this and get permission from members if you intend to post their photos on any type of social media. This is the clarity statement, sorry. At NA meetings, we introduce ourselves as addicts. When members introduce themselves as addicts and alcoholics or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that somehow one drug is separate from the rest, requiring special recognitions. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive in reference to the disease of addiction, allowing us to focus on our similarities and not our differences. Can we please have who is an addict? Thank you. Can we please have why are we here?
I'm an addict named Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi, everybody. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we have lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail. We sought help in medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. We can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is impossible.
Thank you. Now we're going to introduce our speakers. Our first speaker is a very dear friend of mine. Very. I look up to this man, and I'm a woman, but I look up to this man. He always gives me good insight, and I appreciate him. Without further ado, I give you Mr. Richard.
Richard. Thank you. Look up to me because I'm tall. That's why.
Hello, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Richard.
Hello, Richard.
So grateful to be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting right now at this particular time. And I always like to say that the truth of the matter is Narcotics Anonymous was the very last thing I tried, only thing that ever worked for me. And I've been on a mission since July 6, 2004, and that mission is to get through today, make it till 12 o'clock midnight tonight without using no dope, and I have another day clean. Thank you for the East Coast Convention Committee for giving me an opportunity to share at their convention. This is actually the first time I've ever been up here. Or not up here, but at their convention, you know. I guess around the times when this is happening, I'm usually doing, I guess, some other stuff. But I'm real grateful to be here this morning. I'm going to try to stay on topic the best I can. I thank God for my sponsor. I called him this morning, as I always call him, and I talked to him about what I was about to do, and he said, "Rich, ain't no coincidences." He's down in Florida, and he went to a meeting this morning at 6:30, and the topic was the ninth step. So when I was talking to him about making amends, he said, "Wow, there ain't no coincidences," and we talked about the amends process and things of that nature. And he keeps it so simple, like, you know, and he made me look at how important it is to take a look at the importance of making an amends. Like, for example, yesterday, and I had no idea that I needed to make an amends, you know, and I'm going to read something out of our literature as well. And I got to tell you all, fear sunk in the first second that I was asked to speak. And as I was coming up here, fear was just like kicking my ass for real. Because, you know, sometimes I feel like I can't do it. You know, I've been clean for a while. And sometimes the thing says, man, you know what, motherfucker, you ain't got no business. You know, and I started feeding it a little bit. But I was restored to sanity when he was telling me how simple it is. He said, have fun with it. You know, he said, come from your heart and not your head. And that's what I'm going to attempt to do. So last night, for example, and it talks in here about relationships, especially intimate relationships. And I was telling my wife, late last night, that, oh, I got so much stuff to do today. I got to go up and speak. I got to go here. I got to go there. I got to do this. And I never acknowledged what her and I were doing. And she called me on it immediately. And I started to feel bad about that. You know, because it was all about what I had to do and what I was doing for me. And I wasn't even considering, you know, what she made wanted to do today. So in making an amends, and I think it was talking in this book about all amends don't have to be actually spoken out. Sometimes I have to act an amends out, you know, and kind of recreate some of the stuff I thought I was doing today and include her in to my day. You know what I mean? And realizing how I could take my wife for granted so quickly and not even realize it. So I'm going to read something real quick out of our It Works How and Why on page 88 on It Works. And it talks about changing the way we live is a lifetime process and is perhaps the most significant amends we can make. Some of the people we have harmed, like our families or others we've been close to for a long time, have suffered for years. Amends of this nature can't be made in a 5-minute apology, no matter how heartfelt. Although an admission of wrong and an apology may be the starting point, we need to go on by making concerted daily effort to stop hurting our loved ones. If we have neglected our families, we start spending time with them. We have been thoughtless, always forgetting birthdays and anniversaries. We begin to be thoughtful instead, remembering those important events
if we have been inconsiderate, always wrapped up in what we wanted and needed, we now begin to be sensitive to the needs of others. You know, so that's kind of brought me to that point where I have to learn how to be way more sensitive to others and kind of get out of the self-centered routines that I've been in a lot of relationships. Another situation came up, and it took me to the ninth step, where when I was in my active addiction, and it was fucking coke on the table, and I found out that my youngest sister's husband had passed away. Now everything inside of me was saying, you need to go up and see your sister. But there was coke on the table, and I never made it up to see my sister. I never made it to the funeral, and I stopped speaking to my sister because I felt so bad about not being able to make it to see her. Now, the story with my youngest sister is that we were all in foster homes as young children. Like, my mom and dad were addicted, and they couldn't take care of us. So they sent all of us to juvenile hall, back in the day, juvenile court, and marched us all in the juvenile court and put us all up for adoption. There was 10 of us. You know, I think my oldest brother was 10 years old at the time. And we all got put in foster homes. Now, it was me, my youngest sister I just spoke about, and my brother, my brother, who was a year older than me, in one foster home. And they already had children, you know. And I was only about 3 years old at the time. And my other brothers and sisters were placed in different foster homes as well. But we were all in the same community. And I wondered how that happened, because a lot of times foster kids get sent all over the place and they never see each other again. We were all in the same community. And it took about 30 or 40 years before I found out how that happened. You know, I had to get clean to find out. I said to my sister when I was a year clean, how did that happen? And she explained to me how that happened. Well, anyway, I'm just saying all that to say that my youngest sister was like my best friend. And we left the foster home and went to our parents' home, where everybody was already addicted on drugs and drinking and acting a damn fool. And I wasn't smoking cigarettes or nothing then. I was 14 years old. And my brother turned me on to some alcohol. And my sister turned me on, one of my sisters turned me on to marijuana. And my cousin turned me on to heroin. You know, and during the high school times, when I moved into out of the foster home, my parents didn't watch us. Like, my mom had all the kids and my dad had another family somewhere else. So nobody was watching me. So I played hooky from school and all that kind of stuff, man. The first year I went to school, I hardly even went to school. Played hooky. I'm getting somewhere. Just give me a minute, right? I'm trying to go somewhere with this. I was playing hooky. So I missed the first year. I was older than my sister, so I ended up being the same grade with my sister. So me and my sister went through high school all together, right? People thought that that was my girlfriend. That didn't know that that was my sister. And we went to school, walked to school every day. I waited out front after school for her. I protected her, made sure she was all right. Graduated with her, and she went her way, got her husband or whatever. And one day, when I talked earlier, he passed away. And I was so hurt because I was not able to attend the funeral. And I was not able to talk to my sister. And yesterday, my sister was in a car accident about a block away from the house. She's on dialysis, and I guess she told me they drove out too much fluid. And she got in the car and was driving and ran into a tree. She didn't get, like, really, really injured, although her neck is probably messed up a little bit. You know, I don't know if you know it or not, but whiplash hurts later on. You know, you might say, oh, I'm fine now. And then a week later, you'd be like, oh, damn, my neck's hurt. And so I'm saying all that to say that Prior to yesterday, I was able to make an amends to my sister. Because if it don't be for the program North Cross Anonymous, I may have never made the amends. I told her how sorry that I was for not being there for her. And she don't understand drug addiction, because she's not an addict. My youngest sister is probably the only one in the family that didn't even get high, you know. And she didn't really understand, and she didn't really forgive me like I thought she would, you know, because I told her I was sorry for not being there for her, you know. So yesterday we had the conversation about that again, and she was able to forgive me for not being there for her. Now, this was at least 19 years ago, you know what I mean? So what I'm saying is it takes some time, man, to get to amends. For me, it takes some time to get there. You know, I harmed a lot of people through my active addiction, especially my children, pulling them through my active addiction. My ex-wife, I didn't know until after we got divorced how much I hurt her. You know what I mean? Like, I got clean, you know, she was supposed to get clean with me, but she didn't. And I struggled with that for a little while when I got clean, and I moved into another relationship. You know, when I got to North Cross Anonymous, I was 49 years old, and I turned into a 16-year-old or all over again. You know how that goes. You know, you want to start doing stuff with people. And I got into a relationship, and I never forget how I was with my first wife for over 30 years. And all of our children are by, you know, her and I. And we raised them the best we could during the active addiction. And all they knew was mommy and daddy. So when I got clean and I started messing around with another person, I never considered how they felt. You know what I mean? I never considered how they felt when I brought another woman into the house. You know, I never considered how they felt about that, and I went on like business as usual. You know, never once considering how my children felt about me bringing another woman who wasn't their mother into the house and going to bed with her in that house. You understand? Because when my wife and I separated, I took the kids who were between 13 and 20 with me. And I said, honey, you can come, but you got to get yourself together. Now, I got a year clean, and I'm telling her she need to get her shit together, right? And she didn't, but she tried. So I moved on with my life, but I didn't get a divorce for 5 more years, right? Because I was unsure that that's what I wanted to do, because my wife and I had made a commitment, you know, that we would never leave each other. Now, we had been through all the trauma that drugs could bring, all of it. You understand? And then I'd get clean, move into another relationship, and then divorced the woman that I told that I would never leave her. And she had some serious resentments about that. Now, at some point, my ex-wife stopped smoking crack, but she still uses. Now, lessons left unlearned always will return. Always will return. See, I left my wife because she was still using. It wasn't that I didn't love her. I had it all fucked up in my brain. See, it wasn't because I didn't love my wife. It was because she was still using. Now, as I continue to stay clean and work the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I see that that was not for me a reason to leave my wife. I come to find out I should have moved over here a little bit and waited. Move over here, just wait. But I was so impatient that she wasn't moving quick as I needed her to move, because I started turning into God all of a sudden. Right? You ain't moving quick enough, so I'm going to move over here and I'm going to leave you over there and get to another relationship. You know, I'm talking about having some resentments with myself. Right? Now, that don't mean I don't love the woman I'm married to now. That has nothing to do with how I feel about my wife that I'm married with now. You understand? Because God has a way of putting people in position. You know, and my ex-wife is so mad at me that everything that she felt she should have, I have with another woman. I got the house with the picket fence. I got the cars. You know what I mean? I got the good job. I got everything I should have had with her. You understand what I'm saying? And I couldn't understand why she was mad until recently. And the reason I found out is because now she has her own home. She didn't have a home. She was living with her daughter. And still she could get some of the things that she felt she should have from me. She was holding on to these real serious resentments with me. You know, and I was able about, I don't know how long ago it was, talk to her about some of the things that I did in my marriage with her while going through active addiction. And she said, fuck you. Yeah. She didn't want to hear that. So I had to get out the way and move on with that. You know what I mean? It was difficult. And I stopped going around her. I stopped talking to her. She stopped, and all that kind of stuff, you know. And my wife now had a great idea, because here's what happened, and I'm going to be done in a minute. Here's some shit that happened that I just could not understand. I was over my new wife's house, over her nephew's house, right? And her nephew's father and her ex-husband were in the same room together. I've never seen no shit like that. I never could understand how the ex and the present husband can be in the same room together. That just didn't make no sense to me. But my wife now tried to explain that. Oh yeah, that's what we do now. So, here's what happens. We tried the shit. Oh yeah, let's invite her over to the house to our cookout, because she is the kid's mother. Oh, what a bad idea. Oh, what a terrible idea, man. You know, that might work in some families, but that shit did not work, man. I mean, I'm talking about damn near a fight broke out. You understand? Because she's holding on to these resentments. She still loves me. And she's holding on to these resentments. And she's at my crib. You know, long story short, man, it wasn't a good idea. It just was not a good idea. So we stay. If there's a Christmas, I'm not allowed to go. If she's there, I don't go over there. Because every other year we switch. The kids come to my crib. Next year they go to your crib. You know what I mean? We had to find a way, man, to stay separated and let things run their own natural course. You know what I mean? Also in here, I'm going to be done in 1 second. It talks on page 93. It says, our recovery is also a way of making amends to ourselves. We treated ourselves horribly in our active addiction. The guilt and shame we felt each time we harmed another human being took quite a toll on our self-respect. Our addiction humiliated us in a thousand different ways. Now, in recovery, we learn to treat ourselves in ways that demonstrate self-respect. So what I do now, what I've learned, is I try to treat people like I want to be treated. You know, ain't no more of that foolishness. I've been clean for a minute now, and I got to share this real quick. My brain doesn't function like it used to. Like, and I've been trying to make some amends to myself, not being the man I used to be mentally and physically. You understand? And I'm having a difficult time trying to grow out of that into a place where I could be comfortable with me. You all don't know how difficult it is for me to stand in front of a group of people, try to collect all my thoughts, and try to share them out my mouth. At a time earlier in recovery, it was not difficult. But the older I get, you know what I mean, the more difficult it becomes for me to even hold a meaningful conversation. It's really becoming difficult, and I don't like that, and I'm having a very hard time accepting that. Like, I'm right where I am today in my life, I don't have a whole lot really to say until I get started. Once I get started, I can kind of roll with it, but like, my conversation now is, hey, what's up, George? How you? And I'm pretty much done. Like, I don't really have no whole bunch more to say, although I want to. You understand? I want to carry a conversation with you, but my brain doesn't allow me to. And I don't know what that is. I've been to the doctor. Doctor said, oh, you're fine. You know, but I have way less to say now than I ever did in my whole life. Like, I want to be able to verbally say what is going through my brain, but if I think about it, it's a wrap, because the thought's already in my brain and it does not come out through my mouth normally. So I just sit back and I be very quiet, and I don't like that. Because I believe I have a lot to say, but if I think about it first, I can't say it. And I don't, and I'm always so conscious that I don't want to harm nobody with my words. So I'd rather not say anything, because in fear that I may say something to harm somebody. And that's a fucked up place to be at. Excuse me. It really is. So I'd rather not say nothing. You know, I go to meetings every day, most days, discussion or literature, and I want to talk, but if I think about it, I can't fucking speak it. I don't know what that shit is, man. You know? Yeah. I was down in Baltimore and I said that. I said, is anybody else like that? And about 100 hands went up. But I'm not alone. But it bothers me that it doesn't seem normal. It just doesn't seem normal. Because when I am around people who can verbally talk, like, you know, who can, like, everything they think they can say out their mouth, and I'd be like, how the hell, why can't I do that? And I become so frustrated. I become just like, damn, man, why can't I hold a long, endearing conversation with someone? How come I can't tell you how I feel? You know what I mean? And it's so frustrating. I believe that I did a halfway decent job, you know, because I got on a little slight ass roll. You know what I mean? And I'm going to end with this. As a result of working our ninth step, we are free to live in the present, able to enjoy each moment and experience gratitude for the gift of recovery. Memories of our past no longer hold us back, and new possibilities appear. We are free to go in directions we never considered before. We are free to dream and to pursue the fulfillment of our dreams. Our lives stretch out before us like a limitless horizon. We may stumble from time to time, but the 10th step gives us the opportunity to pick ourselves up and keep walking forward. Our higher power has given us an invitation to live, and we accept it with gratitude. I'm an addict named Richard.
Richard.
Ma'am. Together, brother.
I'm Tamika and I'm an addict. Our next speaker will be a sweet lady that I know, who from when I first came in the room, she made sure she acknowledged me, and I thank you for that. Without further ado, I give you Miss Robin.
Miss Robin. Hey, Robin. Good morning, family.
Good morning.
First, I want to thank the God of my understanding who woke me up this morning to start this day off. And I don't know, I'm just like really emotional. So I don't know what God's going to do or say to me. But I want to thank the East Coast Convention. Like Richard, I've never been to the convention. And it's been here. I don't know why I haven't been. I just didn't come. But I tell you this, and I guess this will be an immense process. I really had thought about the separation. Now, our program is about unity. But for many years, I could see the division. And so I think that was one of the reasons I did not come. Because I didn't think that I was welcomed, even though I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And say, I don't know where I'm going with this, but Richard touched on so many things that was so me, like he was stepping on my toes, like that thought process. You know, by God's grace and mercy, when I wake up, I got 31 years and 364 days today. And that's by God's grace and mercy for a woman who came in here who only wanted not to go to jail. You know, I spent 4 nights and 5 days in a county jail out of state. And I knew that jail was not for me. I thought that I had a right to be an entrepreneur and wreak havoc. So that's how I earned my seat in the county jail. And I don't have a real drug log. I did what y'all did to earn my seat. I just really thought I was different. And I thought I was better then. And I thought all these things. But what it was just a mess of all these things that I didn't think I was on the inside. You know, growing up, I'm the baby of 6 biological children. But there was 8. I was raised with 2 twins that came into my life. And I might be all over the place. I know God's going to wrap this up. I know God is going to bring it full circle because I am so emotional right now. And I probably need to take my glasses off because they're getting moist and I can't see. And I really don't need to see y'all anyway. And I'm getting hot. The season. It's the season. So, you know, when I get this topic, we need to remember making amends as a personal, as our personal recovery. I was like, wow. That took me on a journey all by itself. It took me on a journey because when I look back, I think about all my life experiences and how it led to me meeting, you can move that, you can sit there. All my life experiences brought me to this day.
Thank you.
You know, brought me to this day, this moment, to speak on this subject. And I was clueless. I didn't think I was an addict, but I kept coming around. My predecessors that are here kept on saying, Robin, you keep coming. More will be revealed. They kept on saying, Robin, you know, get off the cross. We need the wood. You know, because I was very judgmental. I thought that I had the answers. And I don't know about y'all, but I came in here with I know everything. So, with that being the foundation of me coming into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, before I got here, before I picked up my first drug was people pleasing and wanting to be loved. My first drug was men. I just wanted to be loved. I said there was 6 biologicals and 2 more made 8. At a young age, I felt different because I didn't know that when these twins came into our lives, they were my first cousins, but they were raised as my sisters. And being a baby, everybody doted on me. But then they came along, and their names was Chocolate and freaking Vanilla. How do you compete with a Chocolate and Vanilla? And then I realized that I had short hair and they had long hair. Like I had icktails and they had pigtails. All that stuff started the differences and isolation. And I became quiet. Now people who know me today know that I'm not a quiet person, but I lost my voice. And it was just like doing these things. And so I was sneaky. I snuck out. I got pregnant. And so I came from a two-parent home where my father was the breadwinner, my mother stayed at home. We was a family that prayed together, stayed together. Like, I really, you know, there was the Huxtables, but when I was raised up, it was Leave It to Beaver's people. You know, that family. So we were that family. And I really thought, wow. And but when I got pregnant, and I was going into the ninth grade, my father was appalled. And my mom said, let's bring everybody in. So all my siblings came back. They went to college. I had an older sister who had kids like my age. Everybody came in. My first group conscience. See, y'all thought y'all was doing group conscience. My family did group consciences before I met a group conscience. So I didn't have a problem in understanding and inviting a loving God as we express ourselves, as it expresses itself in our group conscience. And they said, what you want to do about your problem and how can we help? And I said, I want to have my baby. I didn't know that that would be the blessing. But they said, we're going to let you have this one, but you have another one. This one and whatever else you got is out of here. Because I knew what it was like to feel safe or almost safe. What I knew is that I didn't want to be out there on my own. I didn't want to be like some of my girlfriends who moved into the projects. I didn't want to be raising a child on my own. And I never had to raise my son at all. My son literally was raised as my brother. But my mom made sure he never called me Robin. I was always Mom. And when she did that, I didn't understand how they were setting and planting the seeds for me. But because I wasn't able to talk about how I was feeling, because we know that this is a disease of feelings, I didn't know how to express myself. And so because I did not express myself, and I was always told to be quiet, I would always go around the house. They said, be quiet, Robin. And that's all I knew in my household. So I didn't have a voice. And so when things were bothering me, you know, I was raised where children were seen and not heard. You did what you were told to do. So I had this child. I went to school, you know, went to prom and everything as if I was never had a child. My son was, you know, in my graduation picture in the background, you'll see this little chocolate baby with these white Buster Brown shoes on in the background. And I was like, wow, I was that girl. But no one knew it. My family was about keeping secrets. Like, we didn't, you know, we were the Leave It to Beaver family. But needless to say, when I went away to college, and that's when, you know, my addiction went off. And my father brought me home saying, like, look, I'm not sending you to school to get high. You go to school the next time, you go on your own. And he never lied. But in the interim, I started traveling. My name is Robin. I'm a bird. I'm supposed to travel, right? So I traveled the world. I got to do all these things. Never had to be responsible for the child that I had gave birth to. And I thought that was cute. I thought it was cute to be spoiled. Well, note to myself and anybody listening, nothing cute about being spoiled. You know what they do with spoiled stuff? They throw it away. It's no good. So if you're spoiling your kids, stop. You're not helping them. Don't give them everything or let them just have their way. Set boundaries. Kids like boundaries. Trust me with this one. So, moving forward, because I know I ain't got all day. I have the son, and my son was raised. My brother had a son by a woman out of town, and they were raised together. My nephew came, and so my son and my brother was, my son and my nephew were raised together. and my mom was raising them. Then my mom died on us. I was out, I was in Philly somewhere, and I get a call, my mother had died. And my father was so angry at me because my father was trying to tell me, my mom, your mom is sick, stay home and watch your baby. But no one ever made me do anything, so why would I do it now? She died, and my disease of addiction went rampant. But before my mom died, my mom was really a wise woman. She said, you and your father will not be able to live together when I close my eyes. So I want you to be prepared to have your own housekeeping. She said, I want you to get an iron, your spoon, all these things. I want you to have that. And she said, and when you move out, ask him to give you the bedroom set. He will. Exactly what she said. He gave me the bedroom set. I moved out, had my own apartment. My dad said, you'll be back. Y'all need to know I never, ever had to move back home. Because they taught me some good stuff. They said, Robin, my dad, if you can't pay this month, Bill, you can't pay this month or next month. And those things made sense to me. And I live by those things. I got some real good nuggets being raised by both of my parents. But I also suffered a lot. So, I remember my mom telling me that I will always be a bridesmaid and never a bride. So, the person I am, the addict I am, I got married 3 times in this process. I got married before I got here, and I got married twice before, because I just wanted to prove her wrong. But what she was trying to tell me was, you didn't have what it take to be responsible and committed in a marriage. And we're talking about a men's process, right? Each of those men, I had to make amends to, because I did it all for my own selfish reason. It wasn't anything about them. Like, they look good, they smell good, they, you know, the natural outsider stuff. But it was all about me proving a point that didn't make sense. You know, we say in here that none of us make good decisions all the time. This is where sponsorship comes into play. My sponsor was just calling me. This is where sponsorship comes into play. And I didn't think my sponsor could tell me anything. But you know what? It's just good to run things by people. But because I was taught to be quiet, I didn't know how to share. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to share what was going on. So if my parents and my family wasn't listening to me, why would I think you guys would? Why would I think that you would have any life to give me? And so I was living this journey of recovery and staying clean, which is the only requirement, is a desire to stop using. But staying clean must come first. I was able to stay clean, but I didn't know about working these steps and getting clean on the inside. I remember the predecessor said, Robin, this is an inside job. But my inside had been stuffed out so low. It was like all the way down, and it took time. You know, we talk about the mask must go. And I didn't understand that. I'm like, what mask? I'm Robin, I'm me. And every year I kept coming. Things, letters started peeling off of me. And they started like, it was like I was shedding. And I started feeling, and I started really feeling. And this son that I didn't raise grew up. And I remember hurting my son's feelings one day because I wouldn't sign the paperwork for him to go to school, go to college. I couldn't. I was in my active addiction then. And he was so disappointed. I'll never forget the look. You ever get that look from somebody? You know that you did wrong, that look. And from that day forward, I knew that my son would never trust me again to be responsible for him. The only one and only time he asked me for anything, and I couldn't do it. Moving forward, this son is 52 years old today. He just had a birthday on June the 4th. Today I can say that I got a group relationship with him. When we're talking about personal response, personal amends is a part of our journey. I first started trying to make amends by doing all these things and all this stuff.
That wasn't getting it.
You know, the literature tells us it takes time. Just because I'm clean don't mean he okay. He missed a whole mom. I wasn't there. And I gotta quit acting like I was. I was not present. And if I was present, my body was there, but my mind wasn't. I wasn't focused. My son gets married. Him and his wife been married almost 30 years. I was at the wedding with my second husband. You know, we celebrated their wedding. But I tell you that this amends process is ongoing in this relationship. My daughter-in-law don't like me. I believe she loves me, but she don't like me. And I believe she doesn't like me because of the pillow talk. And I don't know, because I've asked, but she won't tell me. I believe it's the pillow talk she's had with my son. My son tells me I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread today. But my daughter-in-law treats me like crap. I don't know what I've done to her. I've asked several times. I can't make this woman be there. I cannot make her be there for me. Or want to think. She stopped coming to my house. My daughter-in-law has not been in my home in over 15 years. Over 15 years. Mm. And my sponsor, everybody said, well, Robin, give her a break. Give her a break. I want to say, bunk you and feed you beans, chicky poo. But she blessed me with two beautiful granddaughters. And that's their mother. And for whatever reason, they think I've done harm to their mother. I've asked them. I don't know. So my grandkids don't come around me much. But this program taught me, Robin, show up. Mm-hmm. I show up. I go to every little thing they have. You know? And they don't mistreat me, per se. But it's not like I'm the first thing they say. Like, make sure. Now when the oldest one was born, I named myself Loving on purpose. You will call me Loving. And that's what they call me. Because they ain't got to like me. But they need to know that I love them and they're going to love me. it's so cute when they say, Lovey. But Lovey, I love that. That's the best I can get. So my son always says to me, Mom, I don't know what's wrong with you and my wife. I can't get in the middle of that. So, a lot of things have happened. My granddaughters are grown. One just turned 22 in May, and the other one will be 25. So I'm this young, loving, right? And the one has been playing basketball since she's been playing basketball since she was three. When they were younger, they did get to come to my house. And she would just bounce that ball. I still got her first basketball in my house. And she would bounce that ball, right? And I graduated. And this is a gift of recovery. It's like, I went back to school, my dime. I got a full scholarship to go to school. And I graduated top of my class with my master's degree. You know, I got awards and everything. That's because of you people telling me I could do these things. I didn't even know. But this is a mess to me. My personal recovery depends on NA Unity. You guys said, you can do this. They see me working somewhere. They said, you need to apply for this and get this scholarship. And I did. And when I went to graduate, my daughter-in-law didn't come. But my son brought both of my grandbabies. And the grandbaby was bouncing that ball. And I remember one of the young ladies I sponsored today. She came to the graduation and stayed with us. And she said, I wanted to tell you so bad, if your grandbaby don't stop bouncing that darn ball. Well, let me tell you about that grandbaby. She now plays for the WNBA. Today. She just got drafted.
Ninth pick. Nice.
She was the ninth pick.
Nice.
And so I'm saying that I was able to travel the world with this one. And like my son, like, Mom, you know, she's doing this, Mom. And so my son would keep me connected. So I know my son is forgiving me. But I had to learn how to forgive myself for all the disappointments and all the things I did not do. And then when I'm thinking that, hey, let me show up, because I wanted to be at the draft. I wasn't invited. I was crushed. You mean I couldn't even stand outside the door? What? My son said, Mom, you don't have to be invited to everything. I was like, he said those words to me. I was crushed. So I go to my sponsors and said, Rob, you gotta look at it this way. They only allow four people to go. But you know me, the addict in me? The addict in me seeing a person that was there that shouldn't have been there. I'm like, how'd she get there? And I'm not there. So, you know, I got this resentment. But y'all know what y'all told me about resentments. Resentments is me drinking the poison and expecting you to die. I got to live until I can die. And so I had to get some acceptance. This is why step work is so important. This is why sponsorship is so important. Because what I realized is I know a lot of stuff. I got a lot of education. But living this life one day at a time, each day new, I've never been here before. I've never been here, so I don't know what they expect or how I'm going to do, but I'm going to be the best I can be if I continue this journey of making my own personal recovery. I got to be true to me. And a lot of times I got to be true when that shit hurts. Because it does. It hurts. I got to say it hurts. You know, my sponsors are helping me celebrate. And my son's coming to the celebration. Somebody said, well, is your daughter at all coming? If she comes, she's more than welcome. Y'all need to know, because of y'all in this program and working these steps and these traditions, I've learned how to accept my daughter-in-law where she is. I love on her. I respect her, and I give her her space. Look, we didn't travel to Tennessee because my grandbaby played for Tennessee. We didn't travel different places. I get right in that car. I be just as nice. Sometimes we have to share the hotel room together. I'm not going to give no ifs, ands, or buts about it, because my family is my family. And if I can get along with all y'all, everybody here, I'm going to get along with everybody in my household. God gave me a gift. Let me share this with you about making, am I good? About making amends for my personal responsibility. I used to say, and this is true, I've never been pregnant again. I never had an abortion. My son, the gift that God gave me, was the only one I had. But the part, remember I was talking about the onion and peeling and the ass must go and everything? The part I left out and couldn't allow myself to share to, like, maybe in the last couple years, is I remember going to the Planned Parenthood, and a nurse suggested I get my tubes tied. And I'm telling you, I forgot all about that. And I'm believing that when I got my tubes tied, it kept me from ever being pregnant again. And I want y'all to know, I resented myself because I didn't tell nobody. I didn't tell the girlfriend. I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell nobody. I just went down there. You know why I went down there? Because I was seeing this guy who's on Thorazine, who said, yeah. But see, back then, that was cool. Don't forget, I'm an addict. And it was the best sex ever. Don't get it twisted. And he said to me, hey, Robin, you know, we got your son, we got your nephew, we don't need any more kids. You might as well get it tubes tied. So I went down there, not with him, by myself. Took care of that. Because I just knew he was going to be my husband. Is it one? Okay. I just knew he was going to be my husband. and I would live happily ever after with Mr. Thorson Shuffle. Brother Man not only left me and married someone who I thought was gay. And they had twins. Devastated me. So, you know, I come from the air, you know, never let them see you sweat. That was another time. And so, because of that, in the back of my mind, that all got stashed back there. And I was like, I wanted to have more kids, y'all. I wanted to have at least 5 kids. I kid you not. I know I'm a good mom. Kids love me. Your kids want to be with me. They'll be like, go home. I kid you not. I'm a good parent. But I had to learn that. But I was so angry. And I didn't know why I was angry. So every level of making amends, of understanding what's on the inside, having to come out in order for me to heal, it's been a tough journey. It's been a tough journey. And so I never really liked to have celebrate for myself. I always wanted to share stuff. And for the first time, I'm having a celebration for me. And my son, my family, and all the people I wreaked havoc with in my little small town, and people who was on the journey with me when I got here have been, you know, are coming. My sponsees are saying, we want to celebrate you. I never thought I was really worthy to be celebrated like that. Never. Never did I think that. So, I'm saying this. When I need to remember about making amends being my personal recovery, I think about my son. I think about the damage I caused to my body. I think about the things I said. Now, I've hurt you guys too. It was easier to make amends to you guys. And what I mean about making amends is, I don't just say I'm sorry. I apologize and do something different. Sometimes you may not say, but if I catch that look, and I know I said something all messed up, I'm a coming to you. You know, he talked about moving to the 10th step. You know, I could do that right then. But this thing about me, my personal recovery, my personal amends, is happening and it's ongoing. I think this committee, I think I'm out of time. I got a few more seconds, but I want to just say this to anybody's listening. I'm going to reiterate this. Don't spoil your kids. Whatever you do, don't spoil them. Make them accountable. I'm telling you. I thought it was cute. There's nothing cute about being spoiled. It's stink, it's rock, it's nasty. Make us all accountable. If I've harmed you in any way, don't be afraid to tell me. I'm open to hear some corrective criticism. Life is too short, and I want to live it to the best of my ability. I want to heal from the inside out, not the outside in. I can dress up the outside and been doing it for years, but my inside is finally churning and burning, and it hurts a lot. I cry a lot, but I'm healing, and I thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to do that. I thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for allowing me.
Can we please have We Do Recover?
Either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? It seems to be this alternative. We go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions of death, or finding a way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this way of healing. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in Maine's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts, and it is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program.
Thank you. All right, this is the third step statement. Take my will, take my life. guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. Thank you. Thank you.